nuts.
Yeah, like the Rogers.
Welcome back to Frozen Hour Locker Room Talk.
Oh goodness. All right, we'll go ahead and do an intro and we'll get right into the flow of things.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's why I said the intro. That's where you get it out.
Walk in. That's not the intro. That's not the intro.
From Race 5 for All in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, it's another exciting episode of the Alabama Frozen Hour. After a month off, we're excited to have another guest on board who is bound to give us a good perspective from Illinois all the way down to the Yellowhammer State. Get to recap the Nationals action for the Division I and women's teams in AAU. Also get to talk about the College Hockey South All-Star Challenge and one of those barn burner topics that all of us can discuss, and we'll set the stage for it later. Welcome to everyone watching or listening around the world. I'm Spencer Tomsett, joined alongside Will Morrow, Preston McElhaney, guest Britton Tebby, proud to be with you in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Gents, it's been a month. We haven't been on the podcast for a month. We've gotten a chance to rest and recover. At least I hope that we've gotten a chance to rest and recover amidst the busyness we've had. But, Will Morrow, I know you've been busy. At least I know last weekend we were busy in Clarksville and such. But how was the March time of the semester for you?
Oh, it was a lot of fun, Spencer, getting a lot done in terms of setting up future job opportunities, hopefully. And obviously the highlight was this past weekend, getting to cover the women's hockey and the men's All-Star Challenge for CHS up in Clarksville.
Yeah, we'll get to talk about that later on in the show as well. But Preston, I know you and I got to work during the first week of AAU Nationals, that you got to basically write for the women's teams, but also didn't know you were going to be working on the color analyst side, but I'm sure that was really fun for you. But aside from that, how was the March season for you this time around?
Oh man, I had a great time in Jacksonville. It was a great way to kick off the month. I mean, things were very nice over there. I like the little arenas they had us in. And then, I don't know, I just came back for spring break, had a good time just relaxing and kind of easing that whole trip off of my mind, because I almost died on the interstate on the way back. But other than that, you know, we're all fine and dandy. We're good.
Yeah, I took that drive after the, I think it was both of the championships, and at least the first week. Then second week, I had to bolt back up after the D2 championship and such concluded. So it was a lot of fun on the Jacksonville side. I just want to point out something interesting. I think this is the first time this season of the Alabama Frozen Hour, it's been all guys at the desk. Now, first things first, girl power, support it absolutely. We love Hannah. She was not able to make it today. We love Kate. She hasn't been able to make it this semester. We also love the other women's guests we've had on the show, but it's kind of cool that we get sort of the bro side. We were talking about the locker room talk before we started recording and everything, but it's kind of cool to be able to just talk hockey at least.
I was just apologizing to Savannah Prefontaine the other day for photobombing the little women in sports photo that they had going on the ice. So again, apologies, Savannah. We love our women in sports, but yeah, this will be nice. Get one for the guys.
Yeah, I'm sure that out of all the things that Savannah would probably be upset about, probably not that.
Low on the list, I
think. That's very low on the things that would
irritate Savannah. She's got a lot on her plate.
Oh, for sure. But we welcome Britton Tebby. We've been trying to get him on the podcast for a while, scheduling conflicts and trying to work things out and everything. But one of those that anytime you talk with him off of the ice, really great conversations to have, really knowledgeable on the hockey side of things. The joke is, you know, people know how to talk ball. This guy knows how to talk puck, and he's very good at it. But Britton, appreciate you taking the time and looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you, Spencer, for having me out here today. I'm really excited, and yeah, let's get into it. Mm-hmm.
I like how you and I had the same approach of, we don't need to shave today. Like, we both had the same of, like, go with the patchy, let the stubble come in a little bit. I think that look, you need to stick with that. I mean, the other thing I tell this guy is, anytime I see him around the arena, I need his tailor. Because the amount of the suit, I don't know if you guys have seen the Tebby fit checks. Like, we talk about with how Kate is always complimented on the fit checks and the suits and everything. But this guy knows how to choose suits and everything. So who is your tailor? Like, how do you choose the suits?
You know, I buy them in high school, and then the freshman 15 hits, and it just naturally gets that fitted look. So
that's kind of what's going on.
So that's just kind of stretch. That's the joke of, like, you thank belts for being with you through thick and thin, and thin and thick again. So, I guess that helps. I wish that were the case with my high school clothes. None of those fit me in any capacity. I was going to say
the freshman 15 was kinder to you than it was to me.
Yeah. So mine was more of a freshman 45.
Yeah. Mine was the PhD 40 that I've started to burn back down from being in the last 3 years here. So, Britton, as you probably know from watching the podcast or listening to it, is that we always like to talk about the journey that people have, because you could talk to 100 different hockey people about how they've gotten to where they are now, and you would certainly get 100 different answers, because there's no cookie-cutter way to get through in this side of things, especially at the club level. So, what has the journey been like for Britton Tebby from the moment you knew you wanted to be involved in hockey to now very much being immersed in the hockey scene in the city where legends are made?
Early growing up, my dad got me started in soccer, and it was just not a fit at all. Not a big soccer guy. Sorry if you're watching, but a bunch of my friends played hockey growing up, and naturally I just started to get into it. Definitely started later than most, but ever since I stepped on that ice, I just fell in love with the game and played all the way up until high school, came in here freshman year, actually took a year off. I did not play my freshman year. My sophomore year, I played for the D3 team here. And then obviously this past year I've been coaching, and it's been great. Certainly a shift going from player to coach, yeah. A lot of stuff I didn't anticipate, but it's been probably the most fun I've ever had playing hockey. And I really do enjoy it.
I will say, as a soccer goalkeeper in high school, I don't blame you on that. It's one of those where there's not as much action going on. It's not as much excitement on it. I'm sure that, granted, you're still on the pitch. What position do you play in soccer?
Oh, this was when I was really young.
Okay, so a lot younger there. So probably just wherever they wanted to throw you in there. But yeah, there's not as much action going on the pitch. So, but I'm sure once you changed over to the hockey side, that's one of the things I've loved about calling hockey this year, whether it's at the women's scene or the men's scene. It's just, I love the fast pace of it. I love it going back and forth. It almost felt weird to me, and I guess, and we'll talk about the All-Star Challenge and such later, but I guess from this past weekend, it felt like there was way more of a difference in terms of the speed and tempo of the women's game and the men's game, but you still have some of the most athletic people out there on the ice, and you've got to see that this whole season, especially with coaching against teams like High Point and Syracuse and Springfield, that you've still got some really intense action on the ice.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And the tempo is really fast. No offense to you. I would say I think coaching hockey is definitely more physically demanding than anything to do with soccer. So,
For sure. Now, as you know, we like to do a deep dive on people's LinkedIns. And not as deep of a dive to look at on your LinkedIn, but you're on the engineering side, specifically environmental engineering, which I'm sure it's good for you to craft plays and try and find ways to manipulate around. But I'm interested to know, from your time interning with Synergy Works Group, mentioned a lot of times where you were a real team player, and you also won first place in what was called the Synergy Capstone Case Competition in trying to get the renewable energy market. I'm sure that, even though it's not on the hockey side, that at least helped you to understand the idea of goals and setting out certain tasks. So I'm interested to know about that experience.
Yeah, 100%. Synergy Works Group, it's a consulting firm out of Chicago. It really was a great experience, and the team I worked with, especially on that capstone case and taking first place in that, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. That was my freshman summer, so I really hadn't ever had an experience like that, like working at a company and interning, and it taught me a lot. And I think a lot of those lessons, even though it wasn't the more business side of things, I can definitely carry over to hockey. And it was a great experience.
I am not mechanically minded. I don't know about you two, but the fact that we got somebody here who could actually go on the mechanically minded side and be on the engineer and everything is pretty cool. This is why I tell people we just tell stories and we don't worry about the mechanical side or anything like that. I'm trying to remember, Preston, were you always wanting to go in sports? Like, was there ever a time of looking into some other degree plan?
Not degree plan, because I feel like by the time it came, ready for me to make college decisions, I was full set on doing sports stuff. But before that, my brain was in music. So I was actually doing a lot of music and stuff all throughout high school. But then once I graduated and started getting accepted to UA and I was coming to UA, I was fully set on the broadcasting side of things. And I already had a good idea of how audio stuff runs because of my background in music. So when it came to the broadcasting side of things, it was pretty easy to figure out what goes where because, you know, most of it is the same. Mm-hmm. So aside from streaming and stuff, but, you know, the majority of it's the same.
Imagine Preston, instead of being his usual, like, Mr. Alabama look, imagine him in the Million Dollar Band, like, on the field. If he had gone into the music side and everything, what instrument would you play if you were in the Million Dollar Band?
Man, I don't even know. And honestly, that whole outfit thing started as a music thing because I was doing gigs over there. Ramajam was in that outfit, and it caught on really quickly. And once I started going to games, I was just like, you know what? I'm keeping this thing on.
What about you, Will? Was there ever a time where you thought maybe dentistry or going into some other field?
You're not going to believe this, Spencer. As a kid, I wanted to be a marine biologist, and I was studying many, many years. I spent so much effort studying to be a marine biologist, and it wasn't until very late in my high school career when I realized I'm not a math guy. I think I knew I wasn't a math guy, but STEM specifically wasn't the path. And I leaned into writing as a bigger skill set of mine. And I've always loved sports. I've always loved sports as a way of connecting with people. And I ran with that. I found sports media, and I've never looked back.
I'm trying to think of some way, because obviously if he were a music major, he is very aware of tempo of the game, and that translates over to the sports broadcasting side. I'm trying to think. Now, Seinfeld fans are having a field day with him on the marine biologist side, where, that is the connection there, because you can identify if there's a golf ball
exactly.
In the blowhole of a fish, or something like that. But, oh, good goodness, marine biologist. Imagine Marine Morrow.
Oh, man.
That could have been your nickname.
Could have been it.
So missed opportunity.
What could have been?
Hey, but speaking of the marine side, you are still interning with the Alabama Water Institute right now. At least, okay, good. I'm glad I got a head nod because otherwise that means he's updated his LinkedIn. Right, yeah. But interested to know how that has sort of translated over to what you're doing now at the Capstone.
Oh, man. I'm trying to draw a connection right now between the Alabama Water Institute and hockey, but nothing's really clicking right now.
Well,
I guess.
I mean, a little bit, because there's water on the ice that's frozen a little bit, so you have to know about those things. But at least with that internship, how has that helped you in terms of not just your career path and going on the engineering side, but I'm sure that's helped you a little bit with sort of knowing the structures and team, the leadership and bonding in that sort of way.
Yeah, it's a great experience. It's mainly just me and my professor working one-on-one, and we're currently working on a paper right now. If you know the National Water Center that's over by North Lawn, so they have the water model, and right now we're just evaluating its efficiency and comparing it against old data from spanning back 40 years or so. Mm. So.
Yeah, I know one of the iconic things that people love to see when they go in Tuscaloosa is that water tower. So I'm sure you know a little bit about that, or have you ever worked on like knowing the efficiency of it or anything?
Surprisingly, no. That water tower is just a water tower. We just mainly deal with the National Water Center and the models it produces, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'll ask him about the water tower, see if anything special is going on there.
So you touched on this briefly about your path to get to the coaching side for the women's team and the Division III team. During your time with the D3 team, certainly there's a mixture, a melting pot of a lot of different majors and a lot of different people on these club hockey teams that it's for people to have that extracurricular activity and that sort of community to where they're able to bond with other people who are doing a similar thing on the ice. So during your time with the D3 team, what stands out most of your mind is some of the more meaningful experiences you had?
Right off the bat, I just want to say that whole D3 team, there were a shocking amount of engineers there. And you'd be surprised talking to anyone, because I think when all of us get together, we kind of seem like we share one collective brain cell. But no, there was a lot of smart people on that team. And I think Alabama hockey overall as a whole has a lot of smart people in it. Some of my favorite experiences from that were just all the road trips and bonding with the guys. And I've made lifelong friends from that team. And it was just an amazing experience to be able to play there. So,
and it's a tough decision sometimes to leave those sort of bonds and leave those things and go into the coaching side. So what was the decision process like, and how you came to that realization that I think being an assistant coach might be the better path for me.
You know, I've always wanted to coach, and that's something I've always wanted to do after I graduated college, and that was always the plan to it's club hockey specifically. I always wanted to coach club college hockey. So yeah, there was just never a doubt. Coaching definitely something I wanted to do.
So how'd the conversation go? Like, how did it come about to where you were able to go to the women's team?
I initially had reached out to Coach Davis about it, and he put me into contact with Savannah. I had never met her before, mm-hmm. surprisingly, knowing how big a figure she is in the hockey community. Oh, but yeah, there were some discussions about it, and then they let me come, and I'm so thankful that they brought me on, because this has truly been one of the best hockey experiences of my life.
I'm sure, and even better with the run that the women's team has had as well. So what was that like? I know we talked before the playoffs with Anya and Coach Davis about heading into the postseason, their expectations, and what they were most proud of with the team. What was that moment like for you when the buzzer sounded and you got to lift the CHS Women's Championship Cup?
Oh, man, there was just so much going through my mind. Those final seconds, I remember Anya, she just ran over and we hugged each other, and aww. I think I still have her makeup stained on my suit from that. that was an amazing experience. Very stressful. I was shaking during it. Really, I'm like, please don't score, please don't score. But that was one of the most fun moments I've ever had in hockey, just sitting there clenching my fists, hoping that they don't score, and then the buzzer sounding and running onto the ice.
He kind of had that in the booth as well a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it was one of those, about to say.
Because here's the thing. We were representing CHS and still trying to be, you know, neutral and at capacity and everything, but I thought we were going to overtime. Like, I thought Tampa was going to find some way to score and find the equalizer on there as it was going down to the final seconds. But yeah, you were a little bit on your heels during that moment.
Oh, 100%. Especially they went on a little bit of a run towards the end there. Yeah. They were setting up the cycle well. Well, that Tampa team, obviously, we saw how hard it was to stop them scoring throughout the season. So, hey, now that I don't have to be non-biased, now that we're not representing CHS, man, thank goodness.
I'm sure when Naomi Dierks had scored that goal from the blue line, though, that had to be a huge amount of just relief for you guys when she scored it from there.
Oh, my God. She shoots the puck so hard. I wish I could see that shot. I couldn't. It was just heard the clap and then saw the net move.
Did you ever shoot any of those during your days at D3?
Oh, no.
goodness. And then you were watching with giddiness from afar. I know there was one of the scrimmage baseball games or softball games you were watching the game, but what was your emotion like during that championship broadcast?
So, yeah, we were watching the semifinals during the baseball game, and we were kind of just sitting there happy, you know, good seeing the women's team move on. But then during the championship game, reality started to set in a little bit, and it was like, oh, okay, this is important. So, yeah, and then watching them overcome those odds and beat Tampa in those final seconds, then hearing your Denny Chimes call and commentary, it was just a very well put together moment, and me and my girlfriend were really happy that they won. And it sucks I couldn't be there. I really wanted to be there. But seeing them win was just awesome, and I'm really glad that everyone got to be a part of that history.
Yeah, you talk about a high-scoring game. I want to bounce back. That USF semifinal. I'm sure on the bench there was a lot of not just frustration but anxiety because USF was trying to get your guys' number, especially with how low-scoring that game was in the rescheduled Columbus Classic, and the only time you had faced off against them. So I'm sure there was a lot of, we'll say, feedback, maybe intense negotiations for you guys during that game.
You know, we love to use the term bus legs. That was definitely a scenario of that. Whatever happened, and our whole mindset is if a game like that happens, forget about it. We know how we play, and the girls know how we play, and there's not really much you can coach if something like that happens. It's more so just forget about it, move on. We have a big game coming up, and there's no use in just wasting time worrying about something that was truly bus legs. So.
Yeah, and no, it was that was one of those games where I almost thought, is USF going to crack through? Are they going to shut down Alabama's run to get to the playoffs? Because I think you and I were calling that game as well, and it's just the Bulls had Alabama's number for a little bit, but then Frozen Tide came around.
Absolutely. I mean, USF was, man, they had a lot of, I mean, especially if you look back at this weekend's All-Star game, a lot of representation from the Bulls. Lauren Panagian obviously comes to mind with how efficiently she scores. And yeah, absolutely. They gave us a little bit of a scare there.
Yeah. Only two teams from College Hockey South went to the AU Nationals tournament, and they had Syracuse and Springwood College head there. And unfortunately, not the performance the women's team wanted in Nationals with starting off. And it was in essence a gauntlet to start out for you guys. First rematch against Tampa, and I didn't know this. Tess Marchie, number 15 for Tampa, had COVID during the CHS tournament, and she was out. Which that was told to me afterwards, and that had a huge impact, clearly, of how Tampa was able to get it done against Alabama. And I know for the game that Preston and I, we were on call for that one, and we were in between the benches on that Publix rink and hearing, we could hear the frustration, we could hear the passion from the Alabama side, and you guys wanted to get through Tampa and put yourselves in a position to advance to the championship, but had to be a really tough loss for you to take, especially from the coach's side.
You know, no matter who you're playing, if you win a game like that in the CHS championship, you know that team is coming out for blood next time you see them. And it just so happens that Tampa, it really is a great team. And we've kind of built up a little bit of a rivalry here. So when we beat them, I knew it was going to be a tough match seeing them in Nationals. And it proved to be. But we'll be back next year and they should be ready.
Did you ever think in your lifetime at Alabama that the Crimson Tide and the Spartans would be a rivalry?
Absolutely not. I'm gonna be honest. I didn't even know about Tampa University until we started doing AAU, because I mostly follow, you know, D1 athletics and all that stuff. So like I knew my Florida, the Miami, Florida State. I even knew FAU. I knew all of the. So I did not know Tampa. Yeah. And I saw that on the schedule. And you know, my first thought seeing Tampa University is, oh, that's an easy game. Little did I know, they're one of the best teams in the country. Yeah. Oops. So, yeah.
Shots fired at the University of Tampa. Yeah, my goodness.
And I mean, they're fantastic. And Coach Zarefass and company, they have a really well-structured team. And getting the conversations getting to have with them during the championship game and during that AAU Nationals, it just shows how great of a team they've got assembled. And they're going to be back. And it's I know there are more women's teams coming into CHS for this next year, so the competition is just going to increase. But moving along, there was that loss, and then I know the team was starting to talk a little bit about clinching scenarios and how they get to the postseason. This is one of those moments where you ran into a freight train with Syracuse. Like they, and clearly with them being undefeated, and they were the best team in the country, and it showed with them going completely undefeated and winning the national championship. But that was one of those matches. And I remember talking to you afterwards where you said you have never seen a team land every shot, like just having every bounce go their way, every shot sneaking in past a goal and everything. And it was just one of those, seemed like one of those off days for the Frozen Tide.
Yeah, puck luck definitely started off the game for them, and they just carried that momentum, and they truly are a great hockey team. And at a certain point, it just felt like every time they shot, it went in. I thought we were playing a team of all Alex Ovechkins out there. It was a frustrating game for sure, and there were times where I was just like, I don't even know what to say. Like, you're shooting from the blue line, and it's going top shelf. Yep. How do you defend that? But, I mean, I definitely think that we're not too far off skill-wise. Yeah. I think we're just as good as them. Just so happened we had an off day, but we will be back, and hopefully we see them again, because that was a fun game, and yeah, I want to see them.
I'm so glad you brought up the term puck luck. I was just about to ask this, because I've talked about this in the broadcast booth a few times, but as a coach, how do you feel about that, or do you believe in puck luck?
Oh, man, yeah, I think it really just depends. Sometimes the other team might just be playing really good. Sometimes we might just be playing really bad. Or sometimes there's games like that where genuinely every shot you take is just going in. It's not on the goalie. It's not on the defense. Like, I do think puck luck exists, and I've experienced it firsthand. I think it's rare. But in a game like that, that's probably the only game I've said this season that we really puck luck played a huge part in.
Absolutely. You get a few like choppy ice, you get a few bad bounces, and things go a certain way.
Yeah, momentum just shifts completely.
Absolutely.
I love how you brought up Alex Ovechkin. Shout out, since we're a hockey podcast, goal number 895. They're selling 895 pucks for Ovechkin. They're $300 each. I'm not buying it. I'm not going down that route. But congratulations to Ovechkin on passing Wayne Gretzky, and that was a really cool moment to see.
And congratulations to Mark Gatcombe for scoring twice in that game as well. Let's go Islanders!
Yeah, he had to make sure he got his Islanders fan in there just a little bit.
I was freaking out. I remember our producer James Shannon over the microphone. I was on sideline camera when it happened for this weekend's CHS tournament. James goes, "Oh man, Will Ovechkin just scored," and I had to take a minute. I had to do a little bit of a lap,
a little bit of a mourning motion. We look over, and he's just completely depressed, man. And all that. So, and I imagine you being from Illinois, Blackhawks fan.
I was born in Philadelphia, so go Flyers.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, you got a little bit of a rivalry between these two generating on
just
that,
a little. But. You know, after that CHS championship, best day of my life, Eagles win the Super Bowl right after winning the CHS Cup. So
I'm sure.
I had a feeling we weren't going to be friends.
Because I remember you talking about you and Nick were both really sick afterwards. Did you watch any of the Super Bowl on the way back?
Oh, it was on the bus, and I was probably the loudest one. Everybody was sleeping, tired from the game. I was on cloud nine.
Yeah, we were watching. And on the way back, I had Theodore Fernandez, one of our production members. He's a Giants fan. So he had the whole moment. He said as a Giants fan, there was no reason for him to watch the NFL season at all. Like, he had no motivation.
That's why whatsoever. I didn't ride home with you, because I knew it would be on the little screen. Yeah, I didn't want to watch that game.
You knew. Yeah, you absolutely knew.
I had a feeling.
Yeah. But continuing on the AAU national side, as we divulged into Ovechkin and NFL and everything, this is how the podcast goes. If there are those of you who are new to this, we just bounce around to different topics. But Springwood College, I know the motivation for the women's team was at that point, win a game, get your first nationals win, make that accomplishment and everything. And Preston and I, again, were on the call for that one. It looked like it was going to go to overtime. Looked like it was going to be close going down the stretch. And Springwood ended up being a lot better than the scoreline showed for their performances against Syracuse and Tampa. So from a coach's side, what was your assessment of that game?
You know, it's the top four in the country. We didn't think any of the teams were bad. Shout out to their coach, by the way. We had some great conversation with him before the game about how he's just trying to promote women's hockey all around. He's a great guy. Going to that game, already being eliminated, it's games like that are tough. Consolation games are never fun. You can play and coach your best, but at the end of the day, it kind of does mean nothing. It's everybody, I feel like, at times might be checked down. We try to get that momentum back, but it's definitely harder to play in those games than it is against a Tampa. So,
and I know it's also, there are a lot of different metrics that go into the decision to make certain players go in or not, and especially goaltending changes. I know Megan Jackson was given the start on that game, and after a couple of goals had gotten past her, she was pulled, and Natalie Kutz got into the game. So from your perspective on that, what goes into the decision from at least the Alabama side to make a goaltending change?
Well, that specifically, I believe her skate messed up really bad. And she had shown me in the locker room when we were giving our speeches, her skate was just completely messed up. So pulling her was less about trying to win the game and more so about, oh, like, you can't really play if you don't have a skate. So, but, you know, we, at the end of the day, we do want to win every game, no matter what it is, a game like that. We wanted to win for our seniors, and games like that just... Yeah. They are, what does the football team call it? Mouse traps or trap games?
Trap games, yeah.
Games like that are trap games.
Yeah, but we didn't even know about the skate side of things. That now has a lot of explanation, because it seemed like, especially how great Megan Jackson has been in the games that she's played in, it seemed very off character for her.
Yeah, and I think, like, I feel like that would have been off character for the coaching staff, too. Like, I don't think she just got, like, Jalen Hurts midway through the game.
No.
So, yeah, no, I kind of figured there was something a little more at play there. I just didn't want to go assuming. I thought maybe it could have been, like, a small injury or something that was, like, undisclosed, but clearly it's not. We know that now. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a fun game to watch at first because it was, like, I felt like Alabama really had a chance, and they started going on a run and started closing the gap a little bit, and then Springfield was just like, nah, and then just opened the gap right back up, and I was like, okay. Oops, you know.
I can't think of the negative connotation for shout out on this, but one of my colleagues with the LI Sports Network, Travis Quigley, so they had a trend of when teams were done in AAU Nationals, if the locker room magnet, it would choose you, is what they said. He has the women's team locker room magnet. for Bama. And I saw that afterwards. We were decompressing the house. I walk up to in there the Verbo we were staying at, and I just see it sitting on one of the chairs, and I'm like, how did you get this? He starts laughing and he's like, hey, the magnet chose me and everything. And I wanted so bad to get that because I wanted to get the team signatures on and everything. So not shout out, but Travis, you made a lot of people upset on that. But
the magnet chose his eBay account.
What would they even go for on eBay?
I don't know.
I was going to say the bidding would start at something, but I don't know if there would be an auction on that at least. But you know, it's still one of those, still great team bonding experience from what I saw. Like, you guys had a couple times where you went to the beach, you guys went on the town, and Jacksonville had some fun times. So even, and that's the other marketable portion of it because of it being in early March before the spring weather fully comes in. But it seemed like the team also had really good bonding time in Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah. Regardless of what happened at those games, it really was a great experience. Just going to Nationals first year as a program, that's unheard of. So getting our feet in the water and kind of gearing up and mentally preparing for the next year. And just, yeah, having fun. The beach was a lot of fun. Yeah. And the team had some good team bonding experiences, made a scavenger hunt for them. So.
Anya was telling me about that whole scavenger hunt thing. And there was like, I know Samantha Lance couldn't do it because she was just sick going through the entire weekend, but seemed like a lot of people really enjoyed the scavenger hunt side too.
Yeah, you know, sitting in the hotel lobby doing my homework and just watching all the girls run around with golf balls and hockey sticks. It was a lot of fun to watch. So
now I want to give you a chance to go on a soapbox because I know Anya would go on this for a long time. I know Savannah would go on this for a long time, but 7:30 a.m. warm-up time for games for the women's division. And I know that I've worked with a lot of different people with AAU over the last couple weeks. I know it's tough that you have to try and balance these things, especially with only having two rinks, two sheets of ice, and making sure you're fitting in all these games and everything. But I'm sure you have your opinions on maybe the women's team should get more of a spotlight or a later starting time so that way they're more rested.
100%. Those start times were not fun.
When did the team wake up on those days?
I don't even remember waking up myself. I'm not a morning person whatsoever. Same. So when I go to sleep at night and wake up that early, it doesn't feel like a sleep. It feels like a nap. And yeah. I had a lot of energy drinks to get through those games. So yeah, I think we were waking up at like 6 a.m. It was not fun. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think we should get more of a nod to later start times next year because. Yeah. It was not fun.
Yeah, Preston remembers those early starts a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so on the last day, I like mad overslept. When I was carpooling, you know, all the previous days just because we were waking up early enough to where I could just hop in the car with somebody. And then I was like, on the last day, I actually had to drive myself over there because I woke up and everybody was gone. Yep. And I got there and then they're like, oh, no, you just barely came after us. We all overslept too. So I was like, yeah, but by that last day, everybody was burnt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You avoided that, Will. It was the, especially for the broadcast crew, we were on site, I think, at like 6:30 or 7 every day, and it was fortunate that towards the end they moved the games later because the pool play had stopped and there were less teams that were on it. But that D3 tournament was also the same brutal grind of having to wake up really early and get through those. So you remember those days in Athens, right?
Of course. Yeah. How could I forget?
Yeah, we remember those long days at the Aikens Ford Arena and having to get over from the hotel and all of that. It's and that was with one sheet of ice too. So with the amount of teams that they brought down, it was that's brutal. So hopefully they will adjust that and maybe move some of the Division I men's teams to the morning slot of games that maybe at that point are not as meaningful on the pool play inside. Because you would think as well with four teams that they would prioritize the women's side a little bit more. But we'll see how it goes from there. But anyways, women's team had a decent run in AAU Nationals as well. The men's team had their pool play in several games as well. Turned out being a lot of physicality. I remember when the women's team arrived, we were sitting in the bench and talking with Anya and the rest of the players. We were watching Alabama and South Carolina. Started getting into some shoving matches on there. You remember those from your playing days, right?
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
There's just something about South Carolina. I don't know what it is, but any of the South Carolina teams, they're just way more chippy, way more chirpy, and way more aggressive than most of the other teams that that you see in the CHS.
Yeah, I don't know what's in the water over at Columbia, but yeah, something is. South Carolina, it's always a good game. It's always going to be physical and chippy.
You're from that neck of the woods. Can you maybe attest to what is in the water over there?
Man, I don't even know, because like South Carolina's D1 team, they're defending national champions, so they're going into this whole thing like really determined to go far. And they walk up in there, and I remember towards the end of the game, it was a one-score game, final minute. I remember seeing somebody poke someone else with the stick, and then them start yelling. Both people get sent into the box, and they, the whole time, they are screaming over like the scorekeeper table and like screaming at the other box and like banging on it and yelling at each other. So then they get out, and the first thing they do when they get out is start fist fighting. And next thing you know, someone's on the ground. There's a, like a parent in the crowd screaming and yelling at the kid, telling him to go back to his locker room or whatever. And then there's like this whole dispute. It was just like controversy, controversy, controversy. And it was just, man, they could not just keep. And then, of course, South Carolina won because they started beefing. There was like 14 seconds on the clock. And I was like, man, why would you even do it this late in the game? Like, you gained nothing from this but stop the momentum. But it was a whole lot. And then, you know, South Carolina pulled away. They had a good performance before they got eliminated by Farmingdale. And it was just a whole, you know, build up there. But yeah, Alabama's men's team, I think they did a good job for the most part being there and put up a good fight against the defending national champs.
Yeah.
So I think for what that was worth, it was not a bad performance at all.
Yeah. I'm sure it's also endearing to see one of your other assistant coaches, Nick Reniger, perform well on the ice there and see him lead the team as well as he did.
Yeah, you know, he's a great hockey player, and I love watching him play.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, love coaching with him. But watching his games is just, it's kind of a weird feeling knowing that, like, huh, he's on the ice right now, and in about an hour, he's going to be in a suit with me on the bench.
I remember him telling that story when he was on the podcast of, like, he had the CHS playoffs, and he had to quickly slip around, and I think he got to your guys' bench area, like, right after or before the national anthem for your guys' game. So, yeah, that was fun. You got anything to contribute on the South Carolina chippiness?
I mean, in terms of late game chippiness, it's certainly, Preston, you mentioned, like, what do you have to gain from it? It's more so in the mind of a hockey player, what do you have to lose from it? The coach is going to get on you much less. If you're starting games or you're starting fights early in a game, that's penalties that are going to cost you down the road. If there's 14 seconds left, drop the gloves. Why not?
Well, like, season's over anyway.
What are they going to do? Suspend me for the next game?
10-minute misconduct? There's 14 seconds left. Let's go.
But speaking of which, that's probably the same case that we didn't really have any chippiness in the All-Star game this past week, the All-Star challenges.
One would hope.
I'm sure. I mean, it would have been funny to see, like, maybe during the skills challenges, because they had those breakaways. Like, the breakaway women's challenge thing on, like, the goal scoring, that was incredible. Like, the amount of stuff that they fabricated and the sort of things. Men's was kind of disappointing. Like, they were just trying to go straight to the goal and make the shots or everything, but the women's were actually trying, like, Sammy Lance doing the whole Ratatouille thing and all. Did you hear about that beforehand? Did she tell you what she was going
to
do?
I had no idea what she was doing, and I saw Anna skate up to her, and I was like, oh, what is this? And then, of course, she roofs it, so that was an amazing play. So funny to watch, and yeah, that they had fun with it, and it's so great to see the girls have fun with an all-star challenge like that, because that's really what it's meant to be. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be about creativity, and yeah, I think our girls took full advantage of that.
Well, when did you know that you were going to be one of the coaches in the all-star challenge?
You know, Savannah had asked me, because Kyle just needed extra help setting up, and she said, if you want to come to Nashville and do this, go ahead. And I said, I'd love to. Yeah, I'm never going to complain about extra ice time, and especially going to Nashville. I've never really been there, so.
Oh, yeah. That was your first time going to Nashville? First impressions?
I've driven through, but yeah, that was my first time truly being in Nashville.
First impressions?
It was a lot. being from Chicago in the downtown, it's so different.
Yeah.
Nashville is super loud and like, all the neon signs, they're not lying in those country songs. It is a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it was also fun being able to go and party with Anya and Savannah and the rest of the team. Especially, you got your true South experience with the tornado warning, too, where everybody had to go in the basement of the bars and everything. We were in Clarksville at B-Dubs with the broadcast crew and everything, so we made a better decision on just going through some rain and all of that. But I'm sure that was fun. That was an experience, being in the basement of a bar for 30 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think we ever got got sent to the basement.
Okay, you guys did. I know a couple of the bars on Broadway. Some of them were down. Were like sending like photos and snaps and things.
Well, because you guys were there the night that Friday night, right? Rocking around Nashville, or was that a Saturday night?
We had just gotten in that Friday night,
okay. Right?
Because we had class, or no, we didn't have class.
Okay.
I think Savannah had meetings, and I was driving her and Anya down, so we left a little later. Okay. So.
Okay, so in that case, you guys went on Friday night then. No, Saturday was the heavy tornado side where a lot of people were in the bars and the basements and everything.
So I remember I was talking with Savannah Prefontaine beforehand about maybe joining y'all in Nashville, but I was, just, caught up with the tornadoes. So, you know, we had a nice meal at Buffalo Wild Wings and stuff.
Watch the Final Four, too. That was good to watch that first match and everything. That was fun. And also, shout out to Danny Baum, the staff writer for CHS, and getting to spend time with him. And also our buddy Eli Cornett, who's also with us on the production crew as well and everything. But anyways, from the All-Star Games, we got to work in several different positions throughout it this weekend. And you just love to see. I know there's this misconception, at least with All-Star Games at the lower levels, they think, well, it's going to be the same as NHL or NFL, where some people think they're not really going to try. They're just getting selected and such. But you saw a lot of people really trying this weekend. You saw a lot of people really trying to, not just for pride in themselves, but for their schools, try to represent well. It was a fun All-Star weekend at Clarksville.
Absolutely. Who says you have to, try? Or who says you have to, excuse me, where was I going with that? My goodness.
That's a good question.
Listen, okay. I think you got a lot of talent on display. I think the fact that it was an All-Star weekend, the fact that a lot of people had this idea that there wasn't going to be a lot of effort meant that there wasn't going to be a lot of skill on display.
Yeah.
My goodness, we couldn't have been more wrong. That was, you think of Sammy Lance, think of Paige Uecks, and a lot of these.
Claire Carson breaking out a couple times.
Absolutely. Oh, no, I'm not just keeping it Alabama specific.
Yeah, sure,
I was psyched to see the entire CHS on display this weekend. Yeah. There was a lot of, a lot of great moments.
How fun was it for you to coach players from not just Alabama, but from the other side that you were coaching against?
Funny story. So Sammy Lance actually specially requested my presence in the locker room between periods to give a hype speech. Huh. And little did I know, she had told the entire team that whenever I was done, just stay dead silent and just look at me. So,
that sounds like Sammy.
And she said she would.
That tracks.
She just burst out laughing, and of course she's wearing her tiara right there.
Oh yeah, I saw the tiara thing, and I finally got it that it was part of her like childhood thing. That was really funny to see her in between periods of the All-Star game just have a tiara on, walking around on the mezzanine. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, funny story about that too. She said, if I score a hat trick in this last game, you have to wear the tiara from whenever she scores till the game ends. And she only had two goals, but then of course she gets MVP. And she gets off the ice, and her mom are like, oh, you have to put it on now. She won MVP. So yeah, there's a picture of me and Sammy, and I'm wearing a tiara, so please don't post that.
Why don't we throw that up right now?
Honestly, open up on the screen if we got it. Yeah. No, she said something to me about it. She's like, I got Tevi in a tiara, so I got the photo. That's all I need. That's all I need. And I jokingly, I was like, do you want me in the tiara? She didn't hand it to me or anything, but I guess her big thing was getting Coach Tebs in the tiara. So that was a funny story to see with that stuff. And how about the cookies all season long from Samantha Lance's mom? Like that, like pleasure to talk with her at Nationals in between games and everything. The amount of the stories that she had there. So another fun story, this shout out to our colleague Charlie Serafian with the University of Tennessee Knoxville. One of the few times we shout out the Vols. But he was working with us in Athens and for the All-Star game. And I'm walking in between periods to go to the restroom or something, and Samantha Lance's mom sees me walking over, and she goes, hey, have you said the juice is loose yet? Because I made a joke during the Springwood game. I was waiting for Sammy to get out on a breakaway on a goal. Okay, and my call was going to be the juice is loose because of her whole Tropicana thing. And unfortunately, it never happened on the Springwood game. So she says that to me, and I'm like, well, I'm actually not calling the game, but I'll say something to Charlie. And I said something to him. He ran with it way too much. he was saying everything. And there was at one point, I think you said, I didn't know. I think it was, I don't know which is more loose, the juice or the five hole on the goaltender.
My apologies to Morgan Scola of the South as well, the South goaltender, when Sammy Lance just kept going five hole. You really got to get down. The butterfly was solid, got to get down quicker. Yeah. That was I think I mentioned that more than once.
Yeah, but Charlie kept any time because Sammy just went on a tear in that, was scoring like I think 3 or 4 goals in that game, and then he just kept saying the juice is loose at Clarksville. I'm like, probably should have saved it for when I was calling the women's game and everything, but it was a sight to see in terms of like all the goals scored and everything. And I know they had kept a point system. Was there any talk at all about the point system and who was winning the overall All-Star Challenge among the North team?
I had no idea who was going to get the MVP or the point system when we were doing the challenges, especially at the end, rating the creativity of the goals. It was all of the North coaches and all of the South, and we were rating the opposite players. So that was really funny. Of course, Anya was way too generous.
I was going to say, I feel like Sammy got robbed on the Ratatouille one. She didn't get a perfect 30, and somebody else whose goal didn't go in got a perfect 30 or something. I felt like she got robbed on that because that was so creative with the Ratatouille side of things.
I love that. That definitely deserved a 30, if not higher.
I love the goaltenders knew they were not having any points. That I love the bit where they all go in front, and they're all just defending whoever else is coming on for the shot. They're like, nope, we're not going to let this in. And that stuff was just so funny to be able to watch because I wasn't calling any of the skills challenge stuff. I was just on the producer side, so I think it was you and Charlie on one of them, and then Brady was calling one with Charlie. Oh, it was a lot of fun seeing those the skills competitions and everything. And then the final day was one of those bittersweet side of things. I'm sure there were a lot of seniors who were emotional because of knowing it was the last time they would put on skates and everything, but it was still. It was still a lot of fun during this past weekend, and I'm going to give you a chance to apologize to Anya because so
I'm glad you brought this
so
up.
Here's what happened. So you and Anya were passing the pucks up for the
I don't think I realized the other passer was you behind the goal line. The other passer. You guys were terrible. I'm not going to apologize. You know what? I'm going to get on my soapbox. Anya Laxton, wake up. You got to tape to tape. Come on now. Those errant passes, costly, costly, costly.
Okay, it was so hard because the girls were shooting and then the puck would bounce out right in the passing lane. So it's like, oh, I don't know what to do. And they're on a time limit. So you just kind of have to give it as close as you can.
As a coach, I feel like you got to be used to multiple pucks on the ice in a practice situation. Come on now. All right.
There's also the added stress of these aren't my players. I have no idea who this girl is. And of course, Kira Duffney is shouting from the bench, come on, Tab, pass better than that.
I'm glad Kira and I were on the same page. That's good.
Okay, good. I'm glad there were other players chirping about that because he started going around. He's like, Anya, you gotta be more solid on the passes. He was starting to go into
tape to tape.
And like, I was in his producer headset. I'm laughing. And he afterwards, he's like, should I apologize? I think I may have gone too hard on Anya Laxton. Now he's clarified that he is not.
Oh, no. Yeah. Any apology has been rescinded. Those passes were rough.
It was a lot of fun. The last thing I'll say in the All-Star Challenge is kudos to Kyle Nell, Commissioner Nell, as well as White Montana and everything for all the work they put off and everything. And I know we've talked several times behind the scenes and the amount of hard work that he puts in every day and everything, but I'm interested to know your interactions with Commissioner now.
Very few. Okay. You know, Savannah told me once that he actually had to approve me as coach. Everything goes through him. I didn't know that. And he had remembered me from my days of playing D3.
Oh, nice.
I've never really met him, so that was a little interesting. It shows how much he knows that if he knew some random third line player like me from D3, then he really does care about hockey. And he knows a lot, and the fact he knew my name says a lot about him as commissioner. He's the man for the role.
I don't think we talked as much about it in your interactions with Commissioner Nell, but I'm sure you've been able to see not just from the CHS playoffs, but AAU, all the stuff that he does behind the scenes is really impactful to help grow the game in the South.
Yeah, there were a few times where he would pop up in Jacksonville and stuff, and he would, you know, talk to us, and he was a really cool guy. And I think one of the things that you have to remember is that hockey itself is growing, let alone at a collegiate level, let alone at a club level within the collegiate. So I think he's done a fantastic job. There was a nice turnout with that. If it seemed like especially for some of the bigger teams like South Carolina and stuff, there were more than just families. Like, there were fans at this game. So that right there should be a testament to how much hard work is being put into the conference and into AAU as a whole. So, of course, great job there.
Yeah, and I know he's bolstering with pride that all of the men's national championships stay in College Hockey South with those. Almost had a chance with Tampa against Syracuse on the women's side, but a clean sweep on that metric. All right, gentlemen, it's time to get into the odd topic. So I'm going to preface this. Tebs, as he's nicknamed, is 21. All of us are over 21 at this table, so we get to have this conversation. There are a lot of times after hockey games, as you two know, or after broadcasts, as we know, that it's time to decompress. It's time to unwind. It's time to actually, you know, enjoy ourselves in that. As our producer, Andy Sakalis, is looking at me with a big smirk on her face, wondering, where is this going? Our favorite after-game beverage is where we'll start on this odd topic and such. So, Tabs, I'll start with you. What's your which cold one do you crack open?
You know, Noah, Savannah, anyone really on the staff knows this, Red Stripe.
Okay.
A little bit of an odd choice.
Haven't had Red Stripe.
Oh, it's good.
Okay.
Red Stripe with a lime, amazing.
Okay. That sounds interesting. So, Red Stripe, is it a beer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it, like an IPA or?
No, it's kind of, it's just a beer. All beer kind of tastes the same to me. Okay. So when I'm out at a bar, Red Stripe is the choice because $2 at Innis.
Oh, yeah. Red Stripe and lime. Well, $2 at Innis if you can get past the cover fees. Because I heard bad stuff about that place. But all right, what's your go-to cold one?
Man, I don't want to say I'm blind to consumerism because I grew up a big Jimmy Buffett fan, but I got to say Landshark Lager, man, and it sucks because the only place you can get it is the gas station these days. Yeah, I can't go to a bar and ask for that because they never have it unless it's Margaritaville.
Yeah.
I almost did that when I was in Jacksonville. I mean, they had one at the beach,
yeah,
and I was Jimmy like, Buffett. Man, should I just drive 30 minutes down there just to get one, like, just because?
He was talking to me about that several times. He's just like, I want to go to Margaritaville at some point, but it's 30 minutes. I don't want to waste the gas to go down that way. I'm like, just do it on one of your off days, man. When you get to go to the beach or something like that, just head down that way.
And no,
I guess you never ended up going to Margaritaville. So I Landshark Lager. I have not been to Margaritaville. I need to try that at some point. I enjoy a good lager as well. So, all right, Mr. Morrow.
I'm all over the map, Spencer, with my post-game beverages. I will say this weekend the Coors Light was hitting. Shout out to Danny Baum for bringing some of those for the hotel room fridge. But yeah. You know, just a nice cold beer, Corona, never hurt.
As long as it has its lime, right?
This weekend I was rocking without the lime, and I was pretty okay with it. You know what? I used to be on the train of I will not drink a Corona without a lime, but I'm feeling a little more lenient these days.
That's criminal.
That's fair. Yeah. I used to be of your mind, but
disagreement on the New York Philly fan bases, now you have it on the Corona not getting its lime. I'm kind of around the map and such. I go more on the stronger side of things because you have to try to get to that high quicker. Jack on the Rocks or Jack and Coke, Crown and Coke is always good. Post game, if it's like beer, I see you shaking your head in the background. I also find myself on the beer side. Yingling is starting to grow on me a lot.
The best American beer.
Yeah, Yingling
absolutely.
It's one of those where it's not too low quality like Bud Light or Budweiser, which I will say, I enjoy a Budweiser, but I'm not like, I can't tell if that's a disagreement.
No, that's me fixing my hair.
But
I like Budweiser.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, people ask all the time, they're like, how can anyone enjoy Bud Light? I'm like, you don't. It's cheap, it's available, and it gets you buzzed. No one drinks Bud Light for the taste. Now, Budweiser is a little bit better.
Bud Light, out of all the cheap beers, Bud Light is by far my favorite.
Michelob is better, man. Taste-wise, it's better. I'm sorry. Michelob
is better. I'm just disagreeing with everybody on the table.
All of them have today.
Michelob,
my goodness.
Michelob is just so much better. I will say, Bud Light, it doesn't taste as bad as people give it a rep on, but Michelob, I find better on its flavoring. I don't know what it is, but Yingling is now the kind of popular, like, mid-ground beer, I would say, that it's not terrible, but it's also not, you know, the best on those because you're going to pay a lot more for those things. Also, Coors Banquet, for whatever reason, the Coors Banquet one has started to grow on me a little bit. So that one's pretty good too. But yeah, if we're going to the stronger drinks, I'm on the Jack Daniel's side. I'm a full like out of most of the bourbons I've tried, at least the ones available, because I'm not paying excess prices for Buffalo Trace. It's good, but I'm not paying excess prices for it.
I see where you're getting at with the you gotta go stronger on the especially after these long game days, these post broadcasts. We're getting in at like midnight, 1 a.m. If you're having a drink, it's got to be a quick one. Yeah. And yeah, you got to get it in. I've been partial to Johnny Walker Black lately too. I've been a little bit spoiled going home for the holidays, and you know. Getting on the, that was a while ago, I guess. My goodness.
I like a good scotch. If you could taste the peat on it and everything. So, Tabs, what's your... I know you're going on the beer side, but like when we get into the stronger liquors, what's your drink of choice?
I'm not too big on strong drinks, and I want to like whiskey so badly, purely because of the sty that comes with it. You know, you got the nice glasses.
There you go. That was me.
Circle ice cubes. I want to like it so badly, but I cannot. I've tried so hard to like it. Yeah. But I can't, man. I'm just a beer guy.
Have you tried it with like mix-ins of like Jack and Coke or Sprite or
ginger? You know, that I can take that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I'm just like, a beer is so much better than this.
Yeah. You like Yingling?
I've never heard of Yingling.
You haven't? Okay. It's started to rise a little bit more and such. Next time you go to the bar, see if they've got Yingling, because it's pretty good. Or if you go to the gas station, just get a six-pack of Yingling.
Is it like comparable to any beer or...
I'm trying to think. It's a little more on the darker side, I guess, to some of the other things.
It's darker for a light beer, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's still... Yeah. So it's still pretty good. I'm also... Anyone Guinness at this table?
Love Guinness.
Love Guinness. No.
Well, we have to excommunicate Preston. But no, now Guinness on draft is the better choice. I also love the extra stout Guinness. When you get those from the gas station. They also have the cans with the nitrous in it. When you open it, it actually inserts the nitrogen all into the drink.
And those are surprisingly good for being in a can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because
honestly, that's the better way to have it, because then it can be poured correctly. And then it's not like the bottles where you pop it open and take a swig and it just tastes like cat pee and tree bark. And you're like, man, I don't know what, like.
That is not what Guinness tastes like.
Now, man, that's what it tastes like to me. So
now I will say that there might be an opportunity for going to Europe, as we had conversations this past weekend for broadcast side of things. I've been told that if you have Guinness over in Europe, you cannot have it again in the States, because of the, like, all imported beer in the U.S. has to be pasteurized, and that makes a huge impact on the flavor. So I've been told if you have Guinness overseas, that you can't have it again over in
I can States. Confirm. I was in England last summer.
Okay.
I had a Guinness. It was really good.
I want to go to the Guinness factory in Dublin. Like, I want to go over there and actually do the full experience and everything. Speaking of Guinness, I know you said Ennis, so this might end up being your place, but favorite drinking spots in Tuscaloosa?
Definitely Ennis. I mean, it's just such a hockey bar. I go there and you know that somebody from any of the teams is going to be there, and I've never gone there without seeing a familiar face. So I love going there. I love talking to people, and that's just the spot. And the music is not too loud. You know, you have some of these other bars, it's loud. You can't really talk. I love having conversations at bars, kind of having a sit down, more of a chill environment. And Ennis is just really good for that.
Oh, nice. I've been to Ennis once, and it was pretty good vibe. And I also hear a lot that a lot of parents like to go to Ennis whenever they're coming in for like football or parents weekend or places like that. They really enjoy it too. So I need to hit up Ennis a little bit more as my time at the Capstone winds down. What about you, Preston? You've been around the block a little bit.
So, hot take, but I think the best place to crack open a cold one is at an authentic Mexican restaurant.
Okay.
It does not matter which one. All I know is that you will get top quality service and a top quality drink. And the vibe is just, I'm just sitting there jamming to mariachi music while I'm drinking my Landshark, man. It's the best.
Well, now, which authentic Mexican place do you like most in Tuscaloosa then?
I don't know, because I can't pronounce none of their names. But, but I just know where they are.
You can't pronounce awesome. Jalapenos?
Oh, I love jalapenos. dissing to Giovanni or nothing, but like, it would be a... Yeah, I love all of them. I know where the locations are, and I'm like, you know, that place has some great mango margaritas. I'm going to go there.
I need to get more on the margarita side when I'm at the Mexican restaurants and everything, because there's some good ones here in Tuscaloosa, too. All right, Will, which place is your go-to?
You know me, Spencer. You know I got a few of them. But Tebs, you mentioned, you know, not too loud music, chill vibes. It's a nice place to have a beer and have a conversation. Shout out to Hopper's Corner Bar, my very, very favorite place in Tuscaloosa, my home away from home. You'll probably catch me there tonight because honestly, after this conversation, I might need a drink.
Where is Hopper's?
It's right across the street from Red Shed.
Okay.
So it's over in that way better.
Okay. Well, you say that when one of your buddies works at, or one of your fellow executives.
Oh, that's right. Apologies to Jake Reichert.
He works in security and all that.
He knows how much I love Red Shed. He sees me there all the time. Karaoke nights with some dear friends from NSMA always, you know.
I still need to go to Red Shed. Fun. Haven't been to Red Shed.
We'll get you out there.
Yeah. Out of the bar plays I've gone to, like, now, Alcove is really good. That's where pretty much no students go to. It's only, like, doctoral students and faculty, and it's a really chill vibe over there. Cocktail Collection is also really good. The Speakeasy above SoCal. That if you get the login code from their social media and everything, it's a really great place to go to. I also found Bear Trap gives a lot of Nashville vibes with like the rooftop bar and everything. It's not the best, but it's still it's nice because I grew up south of Nashville for the most part, so it's good to like get that rooftop view and look around and such. But again, there's better places. There's also you can't necessarily go wrong with Galette's as long as it's not.
Yes, you can. I think Savannah Prefontaine can confirm that she's seen me go wrong at Galette's.
Not talking about that.
You can only go wrong at Galette's.
Yeah, as long as it is not heavily packed in there, it's a nice chill vibe. I also like. I'm trying to think. I have not been to Houndstooth yet. I need to go to Houndstooth at some point.
Well, as a sports fan, you got to. It's the best sports bar in town.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I haven't gone there during any of like the sports stuff or anything, but I need to head over there at some point. I'm trying to think what's the other one. Copper Top was also good. A couple times. Nocturnal is really good. The vibes in Nocturnal and everything.
I've never even heard of that.
It's right next to where there's Copper Top. It's like diagonally across from it. So there's like that kind of section where there's the Jalapenos downtown and what is it, Jack Brown's, and over in that section, it's a really nice chill vibe.
Okay, yeah. Too. Jack Brown's. Yeah. Speaking of which, best burger.
I still have not had their burgers. They've got one in Nashville. That's one of their like OG locations and such. But I've heard really good things about the burgers.
It's good. It's good.
Was there a burger place before Jack Brown's that you liked more in Tuscaloosa?
No, I don't really get that many like good burgers. You know, you have your McDonald's, you know what you're getting yourself into. Yeah. Your Fresh Foods, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe not. But no, a high quality burger, I think Jack Brown's is kind of the only one, or Five Bar.
Five Bar is fantastic.
Good burgers as well.
Yeah, they've got some really good food there at Five. Been there once. It's pretty good in that section. I'm trying to remember. You guys like Catch 22 at all?
Never been.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It's over by Five Bar in that section there too, and it's another one of those chill vibes. I mostly go on the weekdays whenever I end up having the drinking sessions because the weekends I'm not paying cover. I'm used to not paying cover in Nashville, so I'm not even dealing with that kind of stuff. So, any burger places you like in town?
Oh man, so I always say it every time. I'm gonna say Ramajamas. The burgers are big, but they are. I like the aesthetic of the restaurant. I think it's a very nice home cooked feeling burger. I eat it and it's like, you know what? This might have came from the back, but it feels like it came off a barbecue grill. You know, I'm like, hey, I enjoy the music. I enjoy all the sports memorabilia on the wall. They even got a hockey jersey up in there. So shout out to the representation there. But good burger, good fries, good service, good everything.
That's another place I need to go to before I leave Ramajamas. Heard a lot of good things about it. Have to hit up there at some point.
Now, you can get a burger that has an ounce of beef for every national championship Alabama has. So, if that continues to grow, bring some heart attack medication with you if you haven't already. That one, and then they have a BLT alternative to it, which has a strip of bacon for every national championship Alabama's won in football.
I enjoy burgers. I enjoy bacon, but I do not want to put my arteries through the ringer on that.
Oh yeah, no, I made a horrible mistake of thinking I could clear that in 20 minutes, man.
No. Can't happen. So, Britton, thank you for joining us on the podcast today. Really enjoy the conversation and good to see into your world a little bit. And again, I know we were trying to get you on the podcast several times and trying to work the schedules out and everything. Good to hear your insights and exchange some laughter, not just before we started recording, but also between and everything. But appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me out. This has been a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed this conversation and talking to y'all. It's yeah, if you ever want me again, I'll be here.
Oh, absolutely. So you got any final thoughts before we wrap things up on this episode?
It's been a great show. I appreciate y'all having me on, as always. This is great. Roll Tide.
Preston.
Baba Booey.
There it goes. There are times he's like, not going to say it. I am going to say it. And he holds himself from it. But
I don't know if I've ever been on for a Baba Booey. I'm glad I made an appearance.
Welcome to the party. You finally made it.
Honored to be here.
You got the exposure of the meme that's somehow still alive, thanks to Preston McElhinney. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Alabama Frozen Hour. We've got two more episodes that we have before season one is over. We'll have a couple of special guests next week, and then we'll have our finale to wrap things up here for the semester. For Will Morrow, Preston McElhinney, Britton Tebbe, as well as our producer, Andy Sukalis, all the hardworking men and women that make this run so smoothly. I'm Spencer Thompson, saying so long from Tuscaloosa. Another episode of the Alabama Frozen Hour is in the books.